Hello, everyone, and welcome to David and Jeff's Survivor Podcast. I'm David, and with me, as always, is...
Jeff!
How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm wonderful. How are you today, David?
I'm doing well. I heard you may be a little tired.
I'm a little bit tired today. That's okay. I have to work at 4 a.m., so I'm hoping that I can get some sleep soon.
Yes. Well, hopefully us talking about Survivor will not put you to sleep.
Let's hope not. No, I'm always willing to talk about Survivor.
That is good. So, Jeff and I are not going to be having a guest this week, but we are going to be doing something fun and special. We are going to take our top five and turn it into a top ten and do what we have done in previous podcasts and create a collective top ten list. It is going to be the top ten pre-merge male foods. So we're going to be doing that at the end, but first we're going to be talking about the most recent episode of Survivor Blood vs. Water and all of our thoughts on it. But before we even do that, it's time for High Lows. Jeff.
Well, David, this week was better for me than it was for you.
That is true.
So your high pick was Vetus, and I don't know if you remember the episode, but it didn't end too well for him.
Did not end that way.
So you only got 1 point. He did still get 4 confessionals, which I feel like is a lot for someone who is only in half the episode. But
it was more like 2/3, because even after he sold out, they showed Redemption Island with him and Aris.
That is true. That is true. But anyway, he did get 1 point. My high pick was Tyson, on the other hand, who got 2 points. Didn't win the challenge, but obviously didn't get voted out. Got 6 confessionals. Your low pick was Caleb. It was a good pick. You got 2 out of 3 points for him not winning the challenges and not having 2 confessionals. My low pick was Hayden, also a good pick. Got 2 points for the same reason. That means for this week, the total was 3-4 in favor of Jeff. But the overall score thus far is 29-26 in favor of you, David. I'm trying my best here.
Yeah. I think I get to pick first this time for high.
Yes.
But I'm going to pick Tyson.
I assumed as much.
Yeah.
And you know who I'm going to pick in return?
Who?
Jervis. Never nervous. He was a little bit nervous this week, though.
A little bit. Well, whenever you have Grubbs, that makes Jervis.
Grubbs and Monica, too. Let's
you
go hand in hand.
He had quite a bit of confessionals as well in this episode.
Like, he really did have... I think... I can look it up here. I think he had 4, which at this point in the season is still quite a bit. I think the average right now for most people is sitting right around 2 per episode. Tyson gets more. Obviously, like, Caleb and Hayden don't get as many. Let me look up how many Jervis got last episode. I'm using a Survivor Sucks thread as my legitimate means of confessional counting. Let's see, Jervis, 2 this episode. But I think they were substantial, was why it felt like they were.
Yeah.
They were not only long, but also important to the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, as much as people are saying Hayden's pretty invisible, I thought he still got a lot of... It seemed like he was... They always still show him as part of the decisions and everything. I thought he was definitely at least more of a part of it than Caleb was.
Right. I don't disagree with you. I don't think you're 100% correct. Caleb gets 1 confessional every episode, right? He had a couple with 2, and he had a couple with 3 as well. But on, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the episodes so far... Hayden has gotten just 1 confessional. And I think he's more than anything playing the role of our narrator and maybe our, like, audience reactionary guy. You see him not necessarily making decisions, but reacting to what's going on around him.
Yeah, and he's, like, contemplating and thinking stuff.
Right. Yeah. You see more confessionals of him being unsure than you do of anyone else.
And good thing neither of us picked Katie for Lowe's this week.
Yeah, that would have been really bad, huh?
Yeah. anyways, so I think you pick first for low.
I pick first for low. That I do. And, you know, I can't really decide. There's the people who I would have picked, I think, were shown in a very positive light in the preview, which scares me. But I think it's between two people for me. I think I'm going to go with Caleb, though.
Yeah, potential for me was Katie, Laura M., but they could both be the focal points this next episode, which leads me to do I pick Hayden? But it seems like I almost want to pick someone who I think is not going to win the challenge. It has a very good potential of being voted out. And if they get a lot of confessionals, they'll be it. I'm doing 2 out of 3 anyways. And if they're not going to get voted out, they probably won't get that many confessionals. So I think I'm going to go with Katie, actually.
That's fair. That's fair. Who'd have thunk it that Katie would be the last one standing out of a Vetus, Aris, Tina, Katie alliance?
Well, I sort of assumed that. I was surprised when they were going after Katie, like, that she was their choice over Tina. I thought, but, you know, obviously she won immunity, so that didn't happen.
Right. Well, I mean, I just am thinking about how epic this Redemption Island duel is going to be next week.
Yeah, I really would love to see Tina survive.
I would, too. Though I think, you know, we talked about this with Justin last week. I think Vetus still has the best opportunity to come back and win the game.
Yeah, I talked to Justin online about what he thought of this episode, and this was his response. So I suppose it's sort of difficult not to pick Tyson now as far as a winner's edit. But could a Redemption Island returnee actually win the game? Maybe Jeff was right. That's you, Jeff. Vetus and Aris seem poised to dominate Redemption Island. The final three is looking like either Jervis Tyson and Monica or Jervis Tyson and Vetus. In the first, Tyson wins, and the second, Vetus wins.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. And, you know, as I think about it, whoever wins Redemption Island is going to earn it. Because I don't know that there's a bad challenge competitor left in the game.
Sierra.
Is she? Yeah, okay, one. One, but think about, like, you're going to have to get through Vetus Aristine is going to be an epic duel. Let's just look at everyone in the game. You're going to have to get through Jervis. You're going to have to get through Tyson. You're going to have to get through Monica, Laura M., Hayden. I mean, all these are major challenge competitors, people who could really mess someone's game up in terms of challenges. So whoever's coming back is definitely going to have to earn it.
Yeah. But those are our predictions for next week. Stay tuned to see if Jeff will continue to come closer and closer to taking the lead, or if I will maintain my majority points. But let's talk about this episode. We already started chatting about it a bit. Obviously, Vetus and Tina both out, and a double boot episode. Most people hate double boot episodes. I thought that I enjoyed this episode. I thought there were a couple things I didn't like, but overall I thought it was very entertaining when it could have been more boring.
Yeah, I think it was probably subpar compared to the rest of the season, but compared to other double boot episodes we have, I think it's probably the best. I thought both Vetus and Tina gave you a really great tribal council. Vetus obviously kind of goes off the handle. I think he knew he was going home more than anything.
Yeah.
And just decided to screw people up on his way out. And then Tina's attitude during her tribal council really just had... I was watching with a friend, and we were just both in stitches. I mean, it shows you exactly why I love Tina and why I think she's a great player. Because she almost had them convinced to vote for Monica.
I don't think they did. I think it was fairly obvious. If you have the idol, you show it. You know, how many people have brought up, maybe I do, maybe they don't, and then they actually have it?
Right. No,
you keep it an absolute secret, or you show it to them so they're scrambling. We've never actually seen it where maybe I have it, maybe I don't, and then they play it.
Right. You're not wrong. I'm saying I don't know that having Tina having the idol mattered in their I mean, maybe it was a catalyst for their decision, but I think that they were considering getting rid of Monica regardless.
Yeah, and I actually think that Monica is necessary for Tyson and Jervis to get to the end. If you get rid of Monica, let's say they get Katie out even. If you get rid of Monica at 7, now you have Sierra, Laura M,
Caleb and Hayden.
Caleb and Hayden can easily bond together and take Jervis and Tyson out.
Yeah. I don't know that that's how it would shake down, but I think that's obviously what could happen. I think Katie's got her way back in, though. I don't think Sierra wants to play with Laura anymore.
Well, in the secret scenes that they showed Sierra, and she was talking about how she didn't want to play with Katie, and that she doesn't like Katie in the game because they're very similar in their game style and the way they operate, and she feels like she could easily be replaced by Katie's, which is one of the reasons why I think she wanted Katie out over Tina.
That's fair. I can see that. The other thing that, the other, like, wrench, and I think this may be the catalyst as to why next episode there's so much anti-Laura sentiment thrown around, assuming that the previews aren't misleading. No one really, I mean, we saw a lot of people address the fact that Monica voted for Vetus in that first tribal council. No one addressed the fact that Laura did the exact same thing. And so if they're mad at Monica, like, if Monica and Laura votes for Vetus, all you need, if Sierra flips, or not even flips, if Sierra votes for Vetus as well, and Vetus did have the idol, man, you guys are in trouble.
Yeah. No, I agree. But it's interesting. It brings me to a question. Is Jervis, Tyson, Hayden, and Caleb the new four horsemen? Do you think they have a final four alliance?
It's hard because there's so many wild cards, obviously. I'd say probably that's the four that Tyson has planned.
Okay.
I don't think Tyson wants to bring Sierra or Laura to the finals. But I think
he may want to bring Monica. Monica is now officially the GOAT of this season.
Absolutely.
People questioning that, you know, a couple episodes ago, is there actually a GOAT on this season? We now know that Monica is the GOAT. Everyone who's leaving the game can't stand her, and everyone in the game is like, we really want to get her out. So Tyson should, if he was smart, try everything he can to bring Monica to the finals, because Monica is the zero vote getter.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, and I think that that's been proven time and time again throughout the season. Whatever these people are on Edgic who think that Monica's the winner of the season, I don't see it.
They can't think that now after this episode. Like, this episode was, like, nothing but negative towards Monica.
Right. That's fair. I can't imagine they would either, but who knows? They do that sometimes.
One of my complaints about this episode, okay, we have now had 3 individual immunity challenges.
Thank you.
Every single one of them is just standing there on the beach.
Yep. I said the exact same thing when I saw the sword challenge. I literally said, can we get a bleeping physical challenge in here? Especially with the cast. Like, look at who's playing in these challenges. You've got Tyson standing on a beach holding a sword. Jervis, Hayden, like, you should have some of the best challenges ever for this season.
But they must be having really big budget cuts or something, that you do a memory challenge with blocks, then eating bugs, and then holding a sword and stacking coins on it. I mean,
it's either
just an obstacle course or something.
Right, I mean, one theory is obviously budget cuts. I also think it's possible that they're building up to it, which they don't really do, but I could see that happening. And the other theory that I had was that there may have been a lot of storms. We didn't really see a lot of camp life in the last couple episodes, and so it may just be they can't do it because the waters have been too choppy or something.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it could be that, you know, with Double Boot, they're rushing and they're doing everything in a day, so they can't do maybe the elaborate challenges take longer to perform, and they don't have a whole day because they're having to do travel count.
Right.
And any challenge in one. So there could be lots of different factors. I was just, it got to the second one after the food eating. I was like, okay, we're at like the same beach, standing, doing the same thing.
Yep, I thought the same exact thing. You're not the only one who thinks that.
But let's talk about one of the big scenes, the whole babysitting Tina.
Okay.
What were your thoughts on that?
I mean, Tina's point of, if I look for it, then they know that I have it. If I look for it, then they know that I don't have it. You're not, like, they're not thinking that you have it right now. Like, I understand that logic, but by her standing there, like, having that Mexican standoff with them, she's admitting that she doesn't have it.
Yeah, as soon as they found her, she should have sort of already acted like she had it and walked away.
Yep. Or just keep looking. Like, you're wasting your time sitting there with them. Just,
yeah.
Like, keep looking, hope that they abandon it at some point. And then walk back with a big-ass grin on your face.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been under the impression that the best way to make people think you have an idol isn't to look for it, but to look for it for, like, a minute or two and then just walk back to camp and just be normal the rest of the day.
Yeah. No, I think so. Or even the Rupert Bonham strategy of putting a rock in your pocket. I mean...
Yeah, I feel like that doesn't usually... I don't feel like that would fool most people, just because most people would realize, like, oh, that's going to be really super obvious that it's fake. But I guess it fools Russell Hance, so...
Well, and now, first of all, people have seen it, done it before. And also, the immunity idols are usually necklaces now that aren't really rock-shaped.
Right. So. Well, I mean, this one couldn't be heavy at all. Tyson was able to hide it in his buff on his wrist.
I did like
the fact that he was willing to put his... I can't tell if this is going to come back to bite him, or if this is something that's going to end up very good for him, but I feel like him making his alliance have the runaround while he has the idol in his pocket could potentially work against him once he plays the idol, and then people are going to be like, wait, so we went through all this stress, and you could just be like, hey guys, I had the idol the entire time.
I think he is, I thought this episode was nothing but positive for Tyson and his Ed. I think it showed him doing exactly what he needed to do with the idol and everything. I thought this was very Boston Rob-esque, the way he handled the idol in Redemption Island. So I actually think this episode really helped Tyson and Ed as far as potentially before.
I agree with you 100%.
We saw a lot of Petey this episode, as we talked about. What did you think of her this episode?
I liked Katie this episode. I think that it was kind of refreshing to see her in a more positive light, and in a way that kind of showed that she's willing to, maybe willing to fight a little bit. They didn't show her fighting, but they showed her saying that she's willing to fight, which I feel like may set up something next week.
Well, in one sense, we did see her fight when it came to the immunity. Like, that was... No one really expected her to win or do anything like that.
Oh, I meant fight more strategically and socially, but yes.
Yeah. Well, at this point, we saw her at least being a little independent, and her mom encouraging her to be independent, which is good, because she definitely needs it now.
Right.
But who do you think is the next to go? Do you think that Laura M is gonna be out, or do you think they'll stick with the 7 and get Katie out? What is your gut thought?
I mean, I think they'd probably be stupid to stick with the 7 at this point. Like, Katie's not gonna win. I can't see a situation in which Katie wins. Katie's not gonna get Vetus, Aris, or Tina off of Redemption Island. I mean, I just can't see a situation in which getting Katie out is really their best strategic move, right? But at the same time, if there's a time for any of them to flip, it's now, right? if the 5, 6, 7 in the 7-person alliance flip over with KD, they're all top four now. Assuming they can get past one vote.
I would say for most people, obviously for the people who are in the bottom of the 7, and I honestly don't even know who's at the bottom of the 7, I think that it's obviously dumb to vote out Katie, but for Tyson and Jervis, I think it is very good to vote out Katie. One, you're sticking with your alliance and you're not having to backstab anyone, which will give them favors in the jury, because at least they'll be like, yeah, they stabbed me in the back, but we made it to the 7, so that they'll, you know.
Yeah, I think it's probably smart for Tyson and Jervis.
And it's, we've seen it before where one person can weasel their way in and make it much farther and potentially to the end and win. So, I think it is possible for Katie to make it a lot farther and throw a wrench in people's plans if they don't, if they keep her, oh, we'll just keep her one more time. Well, that one more time can then turn into, you know, she's in the finale and the finals.
Yeah, but like I said, I don't see her winning.
No, I don't necessarily see her winning, but I would think, at least from Tyson's perspective, I think he would do best to stick with the plan and convince everyone that they need to get Katie out there.
That's fair. But I'm also thinking, you know, David, in Survivor South Pacific, we saw Ozzy get voted out 3 times, right? He got voted out, came back, voted out, came back, voted out. If Katie switches with Tina, oh no, she would still only be voted out. No, she could still be voted out 3 times as well. If Katie switches with Tina, Tina gets voted out again, then Tina comes back from Redemption Island. Not saying that's going to happen, but it was an interesting thought.
Yeah.
What do you think are the chances of Katie switching with Tina?
0%. I don't think Tina will let her switch.
That's fair. Do you think that if Tina didn't have any say that Katie would switch?
No, I don't think she would. I think that part of Tina's strategy, like, she could have tried, I think Stephen Fishback said this on the Know-It-Alls podcast, but Tina could have tried to make deals with people, but instead she went for the idol plan and trying to find the hidden immunity idol. And that could have been intentional on Tina's part to give Katie a better shot so that she's not taking Katie down with her. And if she's going to everyone and say, yeah, you can join Katie and me, and Katie and I will do this and that, then it's sort of still grouping them together. And I think this way, she made it completely separate and about her and let Katie sort of slip back under the radar, which may be good.
Right. I don't disagree.
So. Now, what's the ratio now of loved ones who've lasted longer than the returning players? Do we know?
Not very high. Jervis, Tyson, Monica. And that's it.
Well, I said loved ones that have lasted longer than
returners. Oh, sorry. Loved ones that lasted longer than returners. Vetus, Katie, Hayden, Caleb,
John,
Laura B.
There's still 4 more. Decision's still out on Laura M or Sierra.
Right.
And
so that's it, because 3 returning players have lasted longer, and then 6 loved ones have lasted longer, and then Laura and Sierra are both still in.
Yeah, so even if Laura M lasts longer than Sierra, the loved ones are still doing much better.
Unless Aris or Tina were to come back, yes.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because this is probably the first season where, you know, it hasn't been the returning players crush the newbies.
Right.
And I'm not saying that a returning player won't win and that they're not in control, but at least I think it makes it a lot more interesting than, oh, look how dumb all the new people are. And look at all the returning players dominate.
Right.
very interesting. Any other thoughts you had on this episode? It's one of those ones where double boots fly by really fast, and you just get nice. You get a lot of fun scenes, but you don't get a lot of meat.
Right.
Anything else that we forgot to talk about? I guess we didn't really talk that much about the food eating challenge itself.
Yeah, I mean, everyone wanted Jervis to win, obviously.
Well, it's pretty epic. Somehow Jervis makes it to the final round and again has to eat the bug larva.
And, you know, let me tell you, those were some pretty juicy grubs.
Yeah, in the secret scene, Jervis describes it, and he says, yeah, they were a lot bigger and nastier than the ones in Borneo. They're like two or three times the size. Those things were huge. And as soon as you get into it, all this red, liquidy stuff comes gushing out everywhere.
Yeah.
But kudos to Monica for doing that. That was pretty impressive.
And kudos for Vetus for being the first person to ever spit food out and then still get it down. Apparently there was an extra round in there too. Did you hear about that?
No.
They went from 6 to 4, or no, they went from 6 to 3 to 2. There was a round where Vetus, Jervis, and Monica had to eat cow eyeballs.
Oh, interesting. And obviously Vetus lost to the cow eyeballs?
Right.
Very interesting. I guess time-wise they couldn't show it, but that would have made it a lot more suspenseful for Vetus. Oh, he's in the final three. Can he do it?
Right.
But, yeah, and is Monica the first female player to win an individual food eating challenge?
Maybe an individual one, but food eating challenges are also not usually individual.
Well, I mean, you have, quite often in earlier seasons, they were the loved ones who were eating them in individual settings. But even then, most of the time, wasn't it I'm trying to remember a female loved one that won the food eating challenge.
I don't think there is one.
Yeah. So I think I'm gonna go on record. If I'm wrong, please someone let us know. But I'm pretty sure Monica is the first female to win a individual food eating competition.
That's a big statement, Daryl. David.
Yes, all those clauses. But yeah, it was sort of. I don't know, I had mixed feelings about it. I was like, oh, cool, I sort of like that they're bringing the food eating challenges back, and obviously did it because it was so popular with Cochran and everything, but the choices this time, I was like, really, mealworms? Like, that's and pig intestines? I'm like, that's not, it used to always be, you know, indigenous stuff, and now it's just, let's just do plain gross stuff. You know?
Well, he claimed that everything they ate was a delicacy in the Philippines. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm saying that's what he claims.
I know, but in the same sense, both pig intestines and mealworms have been a fear factor.
That's true.
It's like, if they're sort of like those gross-out foods, but, like, Americans have mealworms and pig intestines. So it's saying it's not, like, that exotic of a thing, you know?
Right.
The bug larva at the end was one that, you know, is sort of more, you're not really going to find that many of them around here. But.
Right.
But I liked it when they had, like, the tarantulas or, you know, some of those things.
I've just never been a big food challenge person. Especially this one where there was just a lot of nastiness floating around.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I thought it could have been better, but it was epic to see Jervis in it, you know.
And yes, I agree.
And saw Tina fail again.
I agree.
So, any other thoughts this episode, Jeff?
Not in particular, David.
Yeah, it was pretty straightforward. Well, what did you think of the whole Aris and Vetus on Redemption Island being the positive and negative? I've heard a lot of comparisons of them. If you've watched Lost to Jacob in The Man in Black.
Right. I don't watch Lost, but yeah, there was a lot of like Aris like, as long as one of us gets back in, I'm happy, and Vetus being like, dude, screw that, I wanna go back in. So
yeah, do you think that scene swayed the edit one way or the other, that one of them has a more likely chance of coming back?
I think Vetus is more likely to come back.
Okay. Yeah. And in one sense, yeah, it'd be sort of interesting to see the two brothers sort of dominate till the end, but I think it'd also be sweet to see Tina totally kick one of their butts, especially because they're so cocky going into it.
Oh, absolutely. That would be great. But I mean, there's so few challenges that I think Tina has the upper hand in with them.
Yeah, and it would have to be a puzzle, and even then I think it's all up in the air between all three of them.
Right.
So, yeah, if it's anything physical, obviously she's at a huge disadvantage.
Yeah, I think even anything that's has any physical thing involved in it, like, I just don't see many situations where Tina wins this. Maybe if they bring back the pole challenge.
Already. It ended with it, we're gonna start it over with it.
Every challenge this from now on.
Yeah.
Start practicing your pole sitting.
Yeah. We finally got an endurance challenge in the individual immunity sense, but again, it's one of these endurance ones that's all balanced. And to me, those are less cool than the actual, like, willpower or...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the endurance, the quote-unquote endurance challenge is who can stack coins the best.
Yes, that's everyone's favorite.
Well, I know that that's a titillating thing to watch. I'm not sure how apropos it is for Survivor.
So, those are our thoughts on this episode. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. If we could have one more predictable episode, or, as Jeff mentioned, things could be switching up in the very next episode, but I think it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here. And I will say, my dream final three is Tyson, Jervis, Hayden, and I'm just happy that it's still a possibility at this point.
Oh, my dream final three would be Tyson, Jervis, Vetus.
Still has a possibility too, Jeff.
Not a big one, but it's there.
Not as big, yeah. See, I really want Tyson or Jervis to win, so I would rather have Hayden there, because that is my pick to win. So even if he did win, I'd be happy with that. But I think if Vetus is in the final three, he has a very, very, very good shot of winning, which makes me less wanting that to happen.
If I think you want Hayden out at fourth place, that would be the best for you.
And why is that?
Because if he's out at second, or if he gets second or third, you can't possibly make the argument that he should have won.
Uh-huh.
If he gets out at fourth, you could be like, well, if he had just held on for a little bit longer, then he would have won, right? You can always say that. If he gets third place with zero votes at the jury, there's no argument that you can possibly make.
See. Alright, so should we get into our top 10?
Let's top 10 it up, David.
Alright, so last week we did the top 5 female pre-merge boots. And we had a little extra time this podcast, so we were going to do a top 10 male pre-merge boots, and we're going to do a collective list. We've done this in the past with other lists, but I have a bunch of random names on pieces of paper. We're going to talk about one briefly, put it somewhere on our list, and people will be kicked out until we have our final 10. Are you ready, Jeff?
Okay.
Alright, here we go. Our first pre-merge male boot is... a really, really great one, Jeff. I'm being sarcastic. Ibrahim Rahman from Survivor Pool.
He's the best guy we've talked about so far.
That's true. Any particular thoughts on Ibrahim?
I mean, he was on Survivor Palau.
That is true.
He was on the Oolong tribe.
He's one of the many casualties. He was sort of one of those soft-spoken people, so he wasn't a jump-out-at-you kind of guy. But I did think he was one of the more likable people on that tribe.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike him. I just... He was meh for me.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be on our final list yet.
I don't think so either, David. I'm surprised he's even on this portion.
But you gotta throw some random people in there and make it interesting.
Yeah. Is that how that works?
Yeah. And speaking of random people to make it interesting, we have another Survivor Fallout person, Willard Smith.
Or as I like to say, the best Survivor character ever.
You tell me that every podcast, yeah.
Willard is just, he's a constellation.
He was a great curmudgeon for the few episodes that he was focused on, that being like two. But do you think he beats Ibrahim? That's the question.
I mean, I don't know. What would I rather have for dinner, pig intestine or cow eyeballs?
To be fair, if you include the immunity idol,
yes,
he got a lot more airtime.
He did, and you know that's something I always noticed, but I always thought I was crazy until I read the funny 115, and I was like, I'm not the only one.
No, I think for that fact alone, we should put him above Ibrahim.
Absolutely, and for those of you who don't know what we're talking about. Go back, watch Survivor Palau. Willard Smith looks exactly like the hidden, or not the hidden immunity idol, but the immunity idol from that season.
Yes.
That's great.
All right, now let's move on. Who actually stands a chance of potentially being on our list? From Survivor Gabon, Ace Gordon.
He does have a chance of being on our list. Do you want to talk about him, David?
Sure. Ace, I think, was one of these great pre-merge villains. He didn't do, you know, anything that villainous, but it was sort of when you rooted against him and you sort of reveled in the fact that Sugar turned it around on him and got him voted out. He had a British accent, which is sort of rare on Survivor, considering only Americans can play the game. So that made him unique and stand out. There's been lots of contention of whether it's real or not.
I have to say, it would be really difficult to keep a fake British accent to be going for that long.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Ace definitely was a big character pre-merge, and you know he made it quite a ways in Gabon still, and I think he's really remembered.
I agree.
I think he's at the top of our list now, although he doesn't have much competition.
He did not look like the immunity idol.
That's true, but I still think he's above Willard.
Fair.
Fair. All right, another interesting one that I think will at least get second, maybe first. Dave Cruiser from Survivor China.
Who's writing these, David? I want to know. I'd like to complain.
Not a big Cruiser fan?
I mean, sure. I don't. We're ranking the top. But there's no criteria for evaluation, so I guess there are certain things that Dave Cruiser is probably better at than most male pre-merge boots.
At being crazy and annoying people.
At being named Dave Cruiser.
I mean, he was definitely a standout for as long as he was in the game. He was always doing weird, crazy stuff to annoy his tribe. It definitely ruffled feathers every single episode, especially with wrestler Ashley and with Sharia. So there's a lot of people who are not big Dave Cruiser fans on his tribe, and ultimately he got voted out because.
Yeah, I did enjoy the fights that he had with Sharia, but from a purely academic sense.
What do you mean by an academic sense?
I have no idea. I did not. I enjoyed them not because I liked Dave or Sharia, but just because it was fun to watch people fight.
Oh, don't know what that has to do with academics.
It doesn't, but I'm just going to ignore that part.
I think he's safe at number two right now. I think he's above Willard.
I agree.
All right. Here's one of the most crazy big characters from a first boot, and that is from Survivor Philippines, Zane Knight.
Yes, finally, someone on my list.
All right, what are your thoughts on Zane Knight?
I love Zane. Zane's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Survivor character. He gonna king him. That's about all I have to say.
I think it was great seeing how he tried so hard, and he sort of orchestrated himself getting off with his whole strategy that was really dumb. It was.
I'm sorry. Are you talking about the strategy where he asked them to vote him off?
Yes, that strategy. Yes. Very controversial. Not everyone agreed with it. it would have been fantastic to see him last longer in the game. Unfortunately, he was a first boot, and I put him over Francesca anytime.
Oh, absolutely.
But honestly, I look at the list, and I think he's actually number two. I think he easily is better than the other three, but I think Ace Gordon had more of an impact and obviously lasted longer in the season.
I guess I'll give you this one. Maybe I'll be able to grab something from you later on for giving you this one.
And again, this is all in flux, and we can always switch it later on.
That's true.
So, we have five so far, but don't expect most of them to stay on the list. Alright, let's go with another big character from Survivor, Cook Island, Billy Garcia.
Oh, I love Billy. You know who else loves Billy?
Not Candace. Obviously, he's very memorable for... Well, first of all, Ozzy convinced me to try to throw the challenge to get rid of him. And then for professing his love for Candace, who he never actually was even on a tribe with and only had a few words at a challenge with. At Tribal Council, and he will be forever remembered for it.
And you know what? Good on him for being such a good sport about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just sort of a thing where I don't know how you can really dislike Billy Garcia. You could say he's maybe not great at the game, but he's definitely very entertaining to watch. And anyway, and we talked to him personally. He's such a fun, funny guy, and I really enjoy him.
He really is a good, nice person.
But we're not judging that. We're basing it on him on Survivor. So, where do you think he falls in this list?
I'd put him probably underneath Zane.
You put him underneath Zane?
I would.
Any reason why?
Because I think that he should go underneath Zane.
Oh, okay.
No, I think that Zane probably had a more, not only a bigger impact on his season for one versus two episodes, but also just because I think that Zane's kind of big thing was a lot more, memorable than Billy's, probably.
Okay, arguable, but, since we put, Ace Gordon at the top, I'll give it to you for right now, and Zane will stay at number two.
Okay.
Alright, here's another big character. We got another Survivor Palau person, James Miller.
I love James Miller. He is maybe my favorite pre-merge boot of all the people on our list. I think that he's just great. His confessionals were so hilariously funny.
Unintentionally.
Maybe. I'm still not convinced that everyone, that he was fooling everyone. Maybe he's actually like a lawyer from Massachusetts who...
Yeah, obviously this huge character, and we probably would have seen a lot more of him if the Oolong tribe didn't suck so bad and lose challenge after challenge, but, James is definitely a character. He was brought so much of life and energy every single episode until he got voted off. And yeah, definitely was a little sad to see him go because we wouldn't get any more of his hilarity.
Right. He would have been a person who was long for the game if it hadn't been for that losing streak.
Yeah. I'm thinking he's number one right now.
I totally agree, and I think he'll probably stay there for a while.
Alright, let's move on to the next person from Survivor Panama, Bobby Bob Dog Mason.
Bob Dog!
Bob Dog.
I like Bob Dog.
Yeah, he was definitely a very unique and interesting character. We've never really seen another guy like him. Obviously, one of his most memorable things is, well, two. One is drinking the wine and Casa de Charmin with Bruce.
Right.
And then his fight with Courtney afterwards, where he's like, I feel sorry for drinking everyone else's wine, but not yours.
Right. No, that was great. Also, the way that he hacked those fish heads off was just amazing.
Yes, definitely. He was a really good challenge competitor in what we saw, and obviously it was just, he ruffled a few too many feathers to make it any farther, but I definitely think he was a very memorable pre-merge group.
Agreed.
My question is he higher or lower than Billy Garcia?
Oh, I think he's in second place based on what we have.
You think he's higher than Gordon, Ace Gordon?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'll stick with it. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, we have 8 right now, but the people at the bottom of the 8, I don't think are going to last that long.
No.
Let's go from Survivor Fiji, Anthony Robinson, or also known as Cookie by the Campfire.
I liked Anthony. I was one person who was on Anthony's side. I know a lot of people didn't like him, didn't think he stood up for himself enough, but I really did enjoy him.
Yeah, and I think he was crucial for, I think, as much airtime and as much love for Rocky Reed. I think if we didn't have this conflict with Anthony and Rocky, it would not have made Fiji nearly as exciting.
I agree.
So, I would say that he's definitely above Dave Cruiser, maybe even above Billy Garcia.
I would probably agree with you. I would put him, I'll leave it up to you if you want to put him above or below Billy Garcia.
Let's put him below for right now, and we can always change it.
Okay.
Next person from Survivor Africa, Silas Gaither.
I like Silas. I think Silas was probably someone that everyone expected to go really far in the game, but was really the first person to ever be really screwed over by a twist. But he took it really well. He was a really good sport about it and, took his lumps in stride.
Yeah, and as far as impact in the game, he was dominating the game. He was in control of the game up until that switch, and then we got his epic downfall, which, all the fans really enjoyed seeing. So I think his impact is huge, and he was a big character, an influential character, and really, I think if that twist hadn't happened, he was definitely going to make the merge, and, who knows what could have happened from that.
Right. I think he would have done really well. It would have been really interesting to see, a Silas versus Ethan, good versus evil dichotomy in that season.
Yeah. I actually think he could be number one.
Whoa.
I know you love James Miller, but I think as far as impact in the game, Silas is above James.
Really? I mean, maybe impact in the game, but I don't know that that's our only criteria. I mean, you've got probably the best confessionalist in Survivor history up there.
You give James a lot of credit.
I love James. Do you remember him?
I do remember him.
Come on!
I'm currently rewatching Survivor Palau. James just got voted out.
So. Damn!
He was very good. I have no doubt. And I think Silas in Africa was a huge character up until he got out. Every single episode, he was
also in only in like 4 episodes. James was in quite a few more.
If you want to be specific, he was in 5.
I don't believe you.
I'm pretty sure he was the 5th person voted out.
Okay, maybe, but still.
But what was James in, 6?
Yeah, I think he was in 6 episodes.
Let's see, there was 9 people in his tribe, and he was 4th. So that means 5 he was 6. So he lasted 1 more episode, Jeff.
I know, but his... Oh, James. I really like James. That's why. I mean, the Oracle of Oolong here.
I know, but I'm Silas Gaither not being in Africa would have been something completely different.
Same with James. He was the comedic relief for that season.
It's true, but I guess we'll debate this. We'll put him tied to the top right now, and we can debate it later who comes out ahead. But
okay.
All right, let's go with another. He was memorable from Survivor Micronesia, Chet Welch.
Oh, Chet. He was memorable. That is a thing you can say about Chet.
One of the worst challenge competitors in the history of Survivor.
Yes. Got a piece of coral stuck in his foot.
Yes. Yet somehow survived quite a bit.
He did make it pretty far.
As long as James, at least, if not maybe one episode further.
I think it was one episode further.
So, he did make it quite a ways. And it's sort of like, you sort of wanted him to go every single episode, like, because he was so inept.
Right.
But sort of, at a certain point, you're like, how long can he last?
Right, no, like, there was a certain point in the season where you're like, okay, this is getting ridiculous, guys.
It was sort of like at the beginning of Nicaragua with Dan Lembo, and you're like, really? He's like the worst in your challenges, that you're keeping him? Okay. But, I think Chet was even worse. So I would say, where do you think Chet falls?
I'd probably put him in like our 6 to 7 range of what we've got so far. Above Anthony Robinson, probably not.
No, I would say he's definitely above Dave.
Dave Cruiser, yes, I would agree.
Okay, so we'll put him there, which means we have our first casualty. Ibrahim is not on the list. Oh, darn. Alright, let's go to another person you love, Jeff, and I do love him as well. From Survivor Panama, Dan Barry.
I love Dan Barry. I think Dan Barry's probably one of the... If I were to pick, like, a Survivor contestant who I want to, like, go out and hang out with, and you're not allowed to talk about Survivor, I'd probably pick Dan Barry. Because the dude was a friggin' astronaut. Like, that's just awesome. And I really just liked his attitude in Survivor Exile Island. I thought he was really enjoyable to watch. He kind of just had to accept his fate after a certain point, right? But I really like Dan. I can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. He was... Him and Terry were my favorite duo until they had to be broken up, and I was mad when it did happen that way. But definitely, I don't know how, like, from a game standpoint, he wasn't, like, huge and that instrumental in it, but from such a likable person, such a unique person that we've never really had someone comparable, it definitely stands out.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I would have him maybe above Zane and below Ace.
Above Zane, below Ace. I could compromise with that. I would put him above Ace, but I can compromise with that.
Alright. Which means Willard Smith is off our list.
No!
Alright, I know you're so upset, Jeff. Let's go to our next person from Survivor One World, Bill Posley.
I liked Bill, but he was both of our picks to win the game.
He was, yes.
Obviously made the mistake of agreeing to go to the tribal council for the gentleman, but I thought Bill was a really entertaining character. I never understood Colton's hate for him.
Yeah, I think he was likable. He was someone you could definitely root for, especially against Colton. I don't have anything, though, that really is that memorable that he did or that stands out other than him being likable and unfortunately being the brunt of Colton's wrath.
Yeah. But the problem is I don't know where to put him on here. Like, how much did he actually have, how much impact did he actually have on the game?
I would say not that much. So I would actually, I'll put him at number 10 now. Let's give him a spot on the list for a little bit at least.
What would that put, who would that put him under?
Chet.
Oh, I would put him at number 9 then.
You think he's above Chet?
Yeah, at least one spot above him.
Chet, I think, had more impact in the game and was more memorable than Bill.
Okay.
I like Bill. Obviously, if we're going to likability contest, Bill would win.
That's fair.
Alright, moving on. From Survivor, this is one of the only people that we have that was on two seasons, from Survivor Samoa and Survivor Philippines, Russell Swan.
Yes.
Any thoughts on Russell Swan?
I was never the biggest Russell fan. I always thought he was kind of cocky. But I understand why people like him.
And I guess for me, like, if we were just factoring likability in our top 10, I think we're factoring other things like impact in the game and big moments and everything. And I think he definitely had big moments with him being evacuated the first time, but I really appreciated his character a lot more in Philippines, where he was just the person who loses everything and cries out to God.
That's fair. It was enjoyable to watch that, I guess.
Do you think Bill, or do you think Russell is above Chet?
Probably.
Yeah. Anthony? I think he's above Anthony, too.
Yes.
Above Billy Garcia.
Ooh.
I sort of want to say yes.
I would probably agree with that.
Above Zane Knight?
No.
We'll stop it there. Bill Posley is off the list. Moving on. From Survivor Fiji, James Rocky Reed.
I like James, or Rocky, or whatever you call him. I think that he was a great character, and he really moved the pre-merge of Fiji along. Like, if you want to talk about impact on the game, that guy had some impact.
Yeah, I think Rocky was great, and even though he never made the merge, he did make the jury, so we even got to see, you know, him ask a question at the finale and everything. So I think he did have a huge impact in the game. He was such a character. He was a big standout guy. Got in fights. One of my favorite scenes is where he's just randomly nude and walks up to Michelle. Like, she doesn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, so, that...
Let's
yeah.
call Jeff up on the Jeff phone. I mean, there's so many memorable moments from James.
Absolutely.
The question is, would you put Rocky above James and Silas or below them?
I would definitely put them below James. But I know that James and Silas are tied. So I would say put him below James and Silas.
Okay, which means Chet Welch is off the list. Alright, someone who has a very big fan base, people thought he was robbed, from Survivor Gabon, Marcus Lemon.
Was he pre-merge?
He was, yes. He did didn't actually make the merch. He got voted off right beforehand. He made the jury.
Yes, that is true. And they had a 9-person merge that time.
Yes.
I never understood all the Marcus love. I didn't dislike him, but I didn't hate him. Or wait.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't dislike him, but I didn't love him, I guess, is what I meant.
Yeah, as an important character, he definitely, you know, was sort of in control of a certain alliance and was dominating the one tribe. But, yeah, it's not like I adored the guy.
No, there wasn't much character. He was kind of a game bot.
So, where would you put Marcus on our list?
Oh, dear. I always hate this question. I would probably put... Who do we have in fifth right now?
In fifth?
Yeah.
Ace?
Oh, I think he definitely goes underneath Ace. Who do we have in, like, eighth?
Russell Swan.
I'd probably put him in that generic place.
Higher or lower than Russell?
I'd probably say lower.
Yeah. But higher than Billy Garcia?
Probably higher, yeah.
Episode-wise, yeah. Alright, next one. From Survivor Marquesas, one of the first big shockers of the loadout, Hunter Ellis.
Yeah, Hunter was really, like, that was huge when Hunter was voted out, because no one ever had seen, you know, that important of a character and of a, you know, that guy, like, the alpha male get voted out that easily.
They never got voted out. Even Clarence in Africa didn't get voted out for the merge. I mean, we had never seen someone get voted out in the third episode.
Right.
But, as far as, like, personality-wise, I mean, I don't think he was the most personable person or the biggest standout character, but he definitely had an impact in his season and in the show itself.
Yeah, I think he was personable if you knew him, like, if you actually had seen him in real life. He was probably really personable. I don't know how much that actually translated onto TV.
So, do you think he goes on the list? Is he Anthony Robinson?
Better than Anthony Robinson. I'd say probably better than Anthony Robinson, but only by one slot. I'd say put him in 10th.
Not better than,
no. I agree.
Okay. So, Anthony is off the list. So, we move on to, from Survivor Cook Islands, Cowboy.
Oh, I love Cowboy. I love Cowboy. He was my pick to win Cook Islands at first. That was back when I didn't watch much Survivor. When I didn't watch much Survivor, I just loved him.
Yeah, definitely a standout character. I can say I have actually given myself the treatment to get rid of the bad wind, and it does work. So he has actually personally affected my life.
really?
He was just so definitely memorable, very unique and standout character.
Oh, absolutely. Unique.
But I did have a red dot a couple days.
I agree. So who's at the bottom right now?
Hunter Ellis.
Do you think that Cowboy is better than Hunter Ellis?
I would say Cowboy is better than Billy Garcia, right? I mean, he lasted that much longer and was a bigger character in my mind.
I agree.
So in that sense, do you think he's better than Marcus?
Yes.
Do you think he's better than Russell Swan?
I can't decide. What do you think?
Part of me says yes, part of me says no. Let's just keep him under Russell Swan for right now, and then we can change it if we need to.
Okay.
So goodbye, Hunter Ellis. Another guy from Survivor Marquesas, another memorable first boot, Peter Harkey.
Peter Harkey was a memorable first boot. He was a very holy person.
He was very holy. Talked about lots of different holes. and how you need to master them.
And he loved the holes, man.
Yes. I don't know if he makes the list.
I was going to say, I don't think so.
I think he's a great, and obviously if we pulled him first, he probably would have lasted a lot longer over Ibrahim and Willard and people like that. But I just think with the people we have right now, I don't think he quite makes it.
I agree.
But very, very memorable first boot, and I enjoyed watching it.
I agree.
From Survivor Nicaragua, Jimmy Tarantino, a.k.a. Jimmy T.
Jimmy T!
Put me in, coach! Put me in!
Jimmy T.
Any thoughts on Jimmy T?
Not in particular. I mean, he was enjoyable to watch and kind of crazy, but I think he was always overshadowed by the bigger characters of the season, like Marty and Jimmy J for a couple episodes. I don't know. I wasn't his biggest fan, obviously.
I really liked Jimmy T. I thought he was, and actually I found him very annoying at first and wanted to get out, and then as the episodes continued, I was sort of rooting for him and was sad to see him go. I think he was just such an interesting character and threw a wrench into the, that tribe, because you had so many straight-laced people there. I mean, on that tribe, you had Marty and Jill, very rational, straight-laced people. You had Jimmy Johnson, who's even that way. You have Tyrone and Eve. They're not going to do that much. I mean, the only other person you really had was,
Holly.
Holly, when she went all crazy for that one episode. But, and Wendy Jo. But, I thought Jimmy T added a lot of entertainment to the season while he was on it. I guess the question is, do I think he's better than Willie Garcia?
Oh. I would probably say no. I don't think Jimmy T has that moment.
Yeah, that Willie Garcia has. And even if he did beat him, I think he's going to be off the list in the end, so I'm not too concerned.
Right.
So, we'll keep him off. Another memorable person and a big impact in Survivor, another Survivor Marquesas, Gabriel Cade.
I love Gabriel Cade.
This is the first time where we saw it is not beneficial to just be there for the experience on Survivor.
Nope. You will not win.
It had changed at that point to you better be playing to win. If you're not, get out of the way.
Yep, I think you're exactly right. And I think even in Survivor Africa, there were maybe some people who could have been, that you could make the case that they were there to win, but no longer.
Yeah, not that people weren't there to win before.
I'm sorry, play. I'm sorry, I meant for the experience. I meant for the experience.
Yeah, and I think there were, you know, in the other seasons, always people there for the experience, but I don't think they were necessarily voted out because of that.
No, I think you're right.
Gabriel clearly was voted out because he didn't want to do the whole strategy alliance thing. He just wanted to be happy and live on the beach.
Right.
And he was a very likable guy, and it was upsetting to me when I first watched it when he got out. I was definitely a huge Gabriel fan. So I think he did have a big impact in the season and in the game itself.
I agree.
So I think he's pretty high on the list.
I agree.
I think he is under Rocky, but above Bob Dog.
That would put him where?
Four.
I think that's a good place for him for right now.
Yeah. So, goodbye, Billy Garcia. He is no longer on the list. Alright, moving on. From Survivor Thailand, the bad boy of Survivor himself, Rob Zabotnik.
There are two B's in that, Rob. I only heard you pronounce one of them.
Rob.
There you go. A great character, obviously. Someone who really brought life to Survivor Thailand, which was kind of a lifeless season. I think probably going to end up pretty high on our list.
Yeah, he was definitely a standout character, had a lot of big moments. Definitely wasn't the most likable guy, but he did have the choking clay scene, which cracks me up every time, and the getting stung by a jellyfish or urchin or something. and his reaction to that was pretty priceless.
Right.
I guess my question is, do you think he's higher than Gabriel?
I'd probably say so.
You think so? You think he's higher than Rocky?
I'd probably say so.
Really? I was thinking below Rocky.
Well, who would he be right below if he went above Rocky?
Gabriel.
No, if he went above Rocky.
Oh, the only people above Rocky are Silas and James.
Ooh. I don't know. I could see either way. I can go with him below Rocky, though.
All right, we'll do it for now. Marcus no longer on the list, and Cowboy is on the bubble. All right, someone who I don't think is going to make the list, but another memorable first boot, Steve Chicken Morris.
Yeah, I mean, he was memorable, all right. I think that he provided a lot of fun for that first episode, but I agree with you. Probably.
And I think it's another example of overplaying. It was not quite as extreme as Zane Knight's.
Right.
But, yeah, and of course his famous line when he got voted out is, damn!
Right. Damn!
Very memorable, but unfortunately does not make the cut here. Alright, another one who I do not think makes the cut, but a likable guy and had a big, sort of dumb mistake that led to his downfall. From Survivor Vanuatu, Bubba Sampson.
Oh, Bubba. Who doesn't love Bubba?
I love Bubba, and I think it's so ironic that, you know, he says in the same episode, he goes, you know, one wrong move and these women will get you, and then he makes a dumb wrong move of trying to communicate with the other tribe, and that he's out just like that.
Right. Right.
He's definitely, like, I think at the beginning, he was definitely the most likable and the one you're rooting for in the Fat Five.
I absolutely agree.
And I was really bummed to see him. You know, I don't think he makes the list, just looking at it, but I think he's an honorable mention.
Agreed.
Next up, from Survivor Borneo, B.B. Anderson.
B.B. Anderson, oh, first of all, B.B. Anderson no longer with us.
Yes.
Very sad. Second Survivor contestant to ever die. That being said, great first... I'm sorry?
Can you pause for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting a call.
So what do you think about B.B., David?
I mean, I thought he's on the iconic first season. He was memorable for the two episodes he was in. It was definitely taking control. If he's the first person, I think, to ask to get voted out, and thought it was a strategy to lose and get people out. I don't know. I'm looking at the list, and I don't think he makes it.
I agree.
I mean, I'm truly saddened by him, his death, and I thought he was great on Survivor, but I don't think he quite makes the top 10.
I agree.
All right, we only have three more left.
Okay.
From Survivor, Blood versus Water, John Cody.
I really enjoyed John on this season. I don't know that he's going to make the list, but I really enjoyed having him. I think that he provided a sort of, like, breath of fresh air on the newbie tribe, kind of just a good guy. I don't know that you could say many bad things about him.
Yeah, I think he was a good guy. He was solid, but I don't know if he has that many standout moments other than getting backed out.
Right.
So I don't think he quite makes the cut.
I agree.
Two more left from Survivor Guatemala, Brian Corden.
Brian Corden, one of the biggest Survivor fans to ever play Survivor, which is great. He was just really fun to watch on the show. Again, he's another guy that just very solid. Don't know that I can say much bad about him, but really just a solid, solid player and character.
Yeah, I mean, he was interesting to watch him try to do the strategy, even though he was on the wrong side of the numbers, and he managed to survive longer than I initially expected, but he's still got the boot.
Yeah.
So, I don't think he beats Cowboy, though.
I agree.
So, not on the list. Leaves us one more person. Can he make the list? From Survivor Blood vs. Water, Brad Culpepper.
Ooh, that's rough. I mean, Brad obviously had a big impact on the season. He's still impacting the season, right? Like, people are still connecting him with Monica.
But when she voted, what'd she say, get him Brad or something?
Yeah, what up, Brad?
What up, Brad?
I don't know, though. Where do you think he lands on the list?
I think he is more memorable, or, like, more of a pre-merge boot than Zane. Would you disagree?
No, I would not disagree.
Okay, what about Dan Barry?
Probably better than Dan Barry.
Ace Gordon.
Probably better than Ace Gordon.
Bob Dog.
Ooh. I'd probably put him underneath Bob Dog.
Okay. So if this stands the way it is, Cowboy is not on the list.
Okay.
So let me read the list, and do you think someone should go instead of Cowboy?
Okay.
James Miller, Silas Gaither, James Rocky Reed, Ron Sabatnik, Gabriel Cade, Bobby Bob Dog Mason, Brad Culpepper, Ace Gordon, Dan Barry, Zane Knight, Russell Swan.
I'm not convinced that Russell should be on over Cowboy.
I'm not convinced either, but I'm also not that Zane should be on over either of them.
Do you think Zane should be on over Russell Swan?
No, I think Russell Swan had a bigger impact in his two seasons and gave us more memorable moments than Zane. Like, I think he was a great first boot, but like all the other first boots, he only has one episode.
That's fair.
So I guess I would do that, and I would put Cowboy above Russell Swan. And put Russell Swan at number 10.
I think that's fair.
So now let's go with some positioning here. Do you still think Dan Barry is higher than Cowboy?
No.
I don't think so either. Do you think Dan Barry is higher than Russell Swan?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think Ace is better than Cowboy?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think Brad is better than Ace?
Yes.
Do you think Bob Dog is better than Brad?
Yes.
And I would definitely think that Gabriel is better than Bob Dog.
Yes.
Rob Zabotnik better than Gabriel?
Yes.
So this is where we get back to the debate we had a while ago. We have James Miller, Silas Gaither, and Rocky. Where do those three fall?
I think Rocky's clearly third.
Okay.
And I still think that that James Miller's number one.
I'm still leaning towards Silas.
How are we going to resolve this?
I don't know. It's rough. I like our list. Definitely so far, and I think this is the only thing left.
I mean, are we allowed to have co-champions?
No. Come on. There's gotta be clearly the number one male pre-merge boot.
Oh.
I guess, if we're looking at character, James wins, right? If we're looking at impact on the game, Silas probably.
Yes.
So what is the tiebreaker determining factor?
Who gave the funniest confessionals?
I think that's part of the character stuff.
Who built the best bathroom?
We don't know what type of bathroom Silas built.
Exactly, so we can only use existing knowledge.
I don't know, you have Silas, who was sort of the villain and gave us such a great downfall, and you had James, who was the comic relief. It's sort of comparing apples to oranges a little bit, you know?
Right.
It's that they have two completely different roles in their season. You know, it'd be one thing if we're comparing, you know, James and Rocky, because I'd say those are almost a little more similar. James is a little less confrontational, but they were both sort of that crazy comic relief. So, I guess it's just a matter of which do we think it should we have the comic relief be number one, or should we have the villain be number one?
Oh, David!
You're still with James?
I'm still with James.
I will let you feel good, and I'll concede. We'll put James at number one, Silas number two.
Yes! I knew if I held on for long enough.
I could have done it longer, but I do agree that James is a great character, and you know, we'll give a space in between him and Rocky. So
that's fair.
Looking at the list, the only other one that I think is maybe is Bob Dog and Brad Culpepper. To me, they could be switched, but I'm not. I don't know. But maybe Brad Culpepper is recency effect, so we should probably keep Bob Dog higher.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, all right, here is our top 10 male pre-merge boots. Number 10, Russell Swan. Number 9, Dan Barry. Number 8, Cowboy Boy. Number 7, Ace Gordon. Number 6, I miscounted. Let's try that again. Number 10, Russell Swan. Number 9, Dan Barry. Number 8, Cowboy Boy. Number 7, Ace Gordon. Number 6, did I do it again? No, number 6, Brad Culpepper. Number 5, Bob Dog Mason. You know what I did? We have 11 people yet.
Oh, no.
I'm getting mixed up.
You had, you, because with James, you probably, did you mess it up with James and,
Yeah, putting them together, probably. Let's just make it 11.
Hey, the top 11.
Let's do the top 11 male pre-merge boots. Number 11, Russell Swan. Number 10, Dan Barry. Number 9, Cowboy Boy. Number 8, Ace Gordon. Number 7, Brad Culpepper. Number 6, Bobby Bob Dog Mason. Number 5, Gabriel Cade. Number 4, Rob Zabotnick. Number 3, James Rocky Reed. Number 2, Silas Gaither. And number 1, the Oracle himself, James Miller.
The Oracle of Oolong.
I like this list.
I agree.
And I think it's a good list. Let us know what you think. If you think we are completely off base and we didn't even mention someone, or how could you kick that person off the list and keep this person? We'd love to hear from you. Check us out on our Facebook page, David and Jeff Survivor Podcast, or our website, survivorpodcast.blogspot.com.
And make sure you click subscribe on iTunes to David and Jeff Survivor Podcast. It'll download the podcast every week straight to your computer, so that way you never have to go without your weekly supply of David and Jeff.
There you go. Thank you guys so much for listening. Stay tuned. In the future, we're hoping to have a few more Survivor guests, as well as we're going to be talking with Ben Watersworth, host of the Survivor Oz podcast, popular Survivor podcast that is trying to interview every single Survivor contestant. So we'll see if that continues. But I think it'll be great to talk to Ben and hear what he has to say about this season.
Yes, I like Ben. And Ben was generous enough to put us on his list of top 10 Survivor podcasts of all time. So maybe if we make a list of top 10 Survivor podcasts, he might sneak on there.
Yeah, it was besides his own.
Besides his own.
Yeah. Obviously, I think everyone's biased, and if we made a list and we didn't, and if we didn't exclude ourselves, we'd probably put ourselves at number one.
That's not biased, David. That's just true.
Oh, okay. But, guys so much for listening. Stay tuned. We'll be back to talk about the latest episode of Survivor Blood vs. Water next week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.